walk through the culture phrases of open life, who we are, what we're about. And this morning, my topic is, as you heard from the video, excellence. At Open Life, we define excellence as doing everything to the best of our ability. Doing everything to the best of our ability. At Open Life, we don't just think that excellence is a good business practice, but we truly believe that it is how God created and desires us to live. There's a passage in Genesis chapter 4, and we read the story of two brothers, Cain and Abel. And here's what it says, Genesis chapter 4. You can read along in your handout or on the screen behind me. Genesis 4, starting in verse 1. It says, Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel kept the flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. Verse 4, and Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. If we read on in the story, we would find that Cain is so distraught over this circumstance that he actually kills his brother Abel. Now, here's what's going on in this story. There's two brothers, two very different brothers, Cain and Abel. Cain worked the land, worked the soil, made crops and fruits and vegetables and the like. And his brother Abel kept the flocks, raised the animals. And it says that both of these brothers one day brought an offering to God. And listen to how it contrasts their offerings. It says that Cain brought some of his fruit, which in and of itself doesn't really sound all that bad, until the writer of Genesis contrasts it with how he describes his brother Abel's offering. It says Cain brought some of his fruit, but Abel brought the fat portions from the firstborn of his flock, which would be very important and a very big deal. In other words, Abel brought his best and Cain brought his leftovers. And ultimately, Abel's offering was excellent and Cain's offering was not. And so, of course, Abel's offering is accepted and Cain's offering is rejected. I think we can learn a few things about excellence from this story. The first is this. Number one, excellence honors God. Abel gave God his best, and so God was honored by it. In Colossians 3:23, Paul writes, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart, as if you're working for the Lord, not for man. There's this concept in Scripture that if you're doing something for God, if you're working for God, if you're doing something for God, it has to be excellent. It has to be the best. It has to be top notch. Whatever you're going to do, if it's for God, it must be your best. And Paul's saying that that way of living should be the way you live your entire life. Paul says that you should bring your best into every situation because excellence honors God. Second thing we learn is that excellence shows value. Let me tell you the story of Cain and Abel in a little bit different way. Haley and I just started a garden in our backyard. Now, it's kind of a small garden. We have a strawberry plant and we have a tomato plant. And we're pretty proud of them. Now imagine that I invited you over for dinner later this week. You come over, but dinner's not quite ready yet, and so we go out in the backyard because it's a beautiful sunny day, like it always is here in Washington. And we're just enjoying ourselves, and you notice my strawberry bush. And you see that on my strawberry plant, there are some luscious, ripe, large, beautiful strawberries. Just this deep red, and your mouth starts to water. And of course, I notice you eyeing my strawberries. And so I ask you, would you like to have one of my strawberries? Of course you want a strawberry. So you say yes. So I reach down, but I reach past the large strawberries, and I move over a leaf, and I pick a small strawberry from the back that's still a little bit green and has like a brown fuzzy portion on it and looks like maybe some insects took some bites out of it. And that's what I hand you. Now, you don't want to be rude, so you eat the strawberry and kind of say, thanks. To make matters worse, right at that moment, the doorbell rings. And I let you know that I've also invited another one of our friends over for dinner. And they come into the backyard, and of course, they too notice my strawberry bush. And so they see it, and I see them eyeing my strawberries, and I ask them, would you like a strawberry? You're standing in the back like, you know, you don't want one. They don't see you, and so they reply, yes, I'd like a strawberry. But this time, I reach for the big one. I grab the largest strawberry. It's just beautiful. It's ripe. I wipe it off, and I hand it to them. What are you thinking in this moment? You're thinking that I like them more than I like you. And you're probably right. Because excellence shows value. The amount of effort you give is determined by the amount of value you perceive. In every situation or circumstance you find yourself in, the effort you put into something shows the value you place on something. Haley and my wedding anniversary is July 11th. And so we just celebrated our third year of marriage. And we were on vacation over in Bend with family when we celebrated it. But if next year on July 11th, I come home from work and Haley has prepared a nice dinner and there's like candles lit and a large present sitting on the table. And I walk in and say, what's the occasion? And I've forgotten our anniversary. How many of you know Haley would be pretty upset? And not because she really wanted to get a present. Not because she was really hoping to get a new purse. She would be upset because me forgetting our anniversary, me not putting my best effort into remembering or celebrating the day, to her would show a lack of value on our relationship. Whatever you're doing, the question becomes, is this worthy of my best? Is what I'm currently doing, whatever it is, worthy of excellence? Is it worthy of my best? And personally, I think the answer is always yes. God is worthy of your best. Your family is worthy of your best. Your job is worthy of your best. Your kids are worthy of your best. When you bring your best into those situations, you show value. The amount of effort you give is determined by the amount of value you perceived. Third thing we learn is that excellence is not perfection. God wasn't upset at Cain because his fruit had worms in it. He was upset because Cain didn't bring his best. If the best that Cain had to offer was wormy fruit, God would have been happy. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Excellence doesn't mean perfection. It doesn't mean that you don't make mistakes. It just means that you give it your best. At Open Life, we value excellence. It doesn't mean that we do everything right. It doesn't mean that we never make mistakes. But what it does mean is that we always bring our best into every service, into every series, into every venue, into every initiative that we do. You can rest assured that whatever we do, we never do anything halfway because we value excellence. And then the fourth thing that we learn from this passage is that excellence starts on the inside. God has a conversation with Cain and he says, why are you upset? He says, don't you know that if you just do what is right, if you bring your best in every situation, not just the public things, but the private things on the inside and the outside, if you bring your best, if you do what is right, everything will be okay. In the book of Exodus, we read the story of the Israelites becoming God's people. And in Exodus chapter 37, God gives them instructions on how to build the Ark of the Covenant. How many of you have seen Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark? Come on. Okay, so we're all on the same page here. The Ark of the Covenant basically represented the presence of God. It was like a large box. It housed the Ten Commandments, and it was the Israelites' most valued possession. And in Exodus 37, 1 through 2, it talks about the creation of the ark. And it says this: He overlaid the ark with pure gold, both inside and out, and made a gold molding around it. I read a commentary on this verse that said this: It makes perfect sense to overlay the ark with gold on the outside. Everybody's going to see that part every time it makes a public appearance. Obviously, we want to do everything we can to make God look good and to represent him well in front of others. But why overlay the inside of the ark with gold? Wouldn't silver suffice? Is that really necessary? Isn't it a bit extravagant, wasteful, secondary, unproductive? Goes on to say this: Not for a purpose as important as the presence of God. Only the best is acceptable. What would happen if you overlaid the ark, the inside, the part of your life that no one sees, with gold? To give great effort to the hidden details. Now, this doesn't come naturally. We're good at getting our stuff together in high traffic areas of our lives, aren't we? The stuff that everyone sees, the stuff that's in the limelight. But do I overlay the inside parts of my personal life with gold? Do I speak well of others at all times? Do I monitor my private thoughts, even though they're not projected onto the big screen? Do I wear a Christian cape on weekends only, or am I a loving, kind, thoughtful husband Monday through Friday? When we honor God with excellence in the areas that no one sees, God will honor us with excellence in the places that everyone sees. Because excellence starts on the inside. One of mine and my wife Haley's bucket list items, one of those things that we want to do before we die, is to be involved in a flash mob. If you don't know what a flash mob is, according to Wikipedia, the source of all information and knowledge, a flash mob is a group of people who assemble suddenly in a public place, perform an unusual and sometimes seemingly pointless act for a brief time, then disperse, often for the purpose of entertainment and or satire. Flash mobs are organized via telecommunications, social media, or viral emails. In case you're wondering, the first flash mob was created in Manhattan in May of 2003 by Bill Wasik, senior editor of Harper's Magazine. His first attempt at a flash mob was actually unsuccessful because the location got tipped off beforehand and stopped the people. So he planned a second attempt. And on June 3rd, 2003, at Macy's department store, more than 100 people converged on the ninth floor rug department of the store, gathering around an expensive rug. Anyone approached by a sales assistant was advised to say that the gatherers lived together in a warehouse on the outskirts of New York, and that they were shopping for a love rug, and that they made all their purchases as a group. Subsequently, 200 people flooded the lobby and mezzanine of the Hyatt Hotel in synchronized applause for about 15 seconds. And a shoe boutique in Soho was invaded by participants pretending to be tourists on a bus trip. Wasik claimed that he created flash mobs as a social experiment designed to poke fun at hipsters and to highlight the cultural atmosphere of conformity and of wanting to be an insider or part of the next big thing. If you've never seen a flash mob, check out this video.
All right, thanks for coming out, everybody. Really excited that all you guys are here. We've got a really exciting mission that we're going to be doing today. We're going to be freezing in place on cue at the exact second. We're going to hold that for 5 minutes, and then we're going to unfreeze, and we're out.
Happening?
I don't know.
I just walked in. Has it been going on for a while?
No, I just know so. This guy just dropped the papers a couple minutes ago. About a minute ago, not even.
Look at that lady over here.
It's like everybody.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of people frozen everywhere. This is wild.
This is so weird.
I don't understand what's going on.
I don't either.
I think it's some kind of protest, probably.
See, is that an acting class?
No, they are not moving. I can't move my cot. I need some help. Never mind. They're moving.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
It's really cool.
I thought it was only me who's seen it for a little while.
Can you see why I want to be a part of that? If you want to add that to your bucket list, that's okay. You can do that as well. The very first flash mob that I ever saw was on YouTube several years ago, and it was of about 100 Japanese people, and this video had three scenes. In the first scene, a man was walking down an alleyway, and 100 people come around the corner on the other side, just sprinting the other way. This guy takes one look at him, turns, and books it with him. The next scene, a guy gets out of his car and is walking down the street. Next thing he knows, 100 people surround him, pick him up, throw him into the air three times, set him down, and then leave. And then in the third and final scene, a different man is walking down a park on his cell phone. And slowly, the 100 people just kind of end up all around him. And without even realizing it, he's just in the middle of this large crowd of people all walking the same direction. One guy yells, "Duck," and 100 people hit the ground. This guy gets down. He's covering his head. He's trying to figure out what's going on. You see, there's a natural human desire to conform with the people around you, to blend in. I read an article on marketing and persuading people to buy your product the other day that said this: research in persuasion has uncovered a powerful motivator, the desire to blend in with one's peers. Social psychologists refer to this influencing factor as social proof, or as persuasion expert Robert Cialdini terms it, the consensus principle. The effect of peer pressure on teenagers is well known, but what about on adults? As reported in the New York Times, electric utilities from Cambridge, Massachusetts to Sacramento, California, have adopted his method for encouraging customers, all of who are adults, to reduce their electrical consumption. Electric bills from those utilities now include a graph showing how the individual's household's electric consumption compares with the average amount consumed by their neighbors. This has had quite the effect. In Nudging People to Combat Climate Change, author Pete Aldhouse reported an unexpected consequence of telling consumers how their electrical usage stacked up against the average. What happened is this. One utility was encouraged to see that those who consumed more than the average reduced their electric consumption. But those who used less than average actually increased their electrical usage. Clearly, people wouldn't do this consciously, but it happened automatically. Social psychologists refer to the magnetic middle, the tendency for humans to unconsciously seek consensus with their peers. It's evident that the unconscious desire to blend in with one's peers does not disappear once teens become adults. People will always be influenced by what others around them are doing. The problem with this is that it directly stands in opposition to the principle of excellence. You see, comparing yourself to others always leads to one of two things: insecurity or pride. And neither one are good. When we compare ourselves to others, we either see people who are better at blank than us, and we get discouraged. We think, I'll never be that good. I'll never be able to do that. So why should I even try? And we bring our effort level down. Or we see people who aren't as good at blank as us, and we get a little bit cocky. We think, yeah, I am the best. I'm good at that. I don't even need to practice. I don't even need to try because I'm better than them. And our effort level diminishes. Both of these outcomes are harmful and keep us from excellence, keep us from giving our best. Excellence is not the same, is not doing the same as everyone else. Excellence is doing our best. The reality is that mediocrity is mass produced, but excellence is custom made. Excellence never happens on accident. We don't drift towards being better at something. We don't just unconsciously, without even putting any effort, get good at something. It comes through purpose and dedication. Excellence only happens on purpose. Does anybody know what this is? Perhaps you've seen one in an old photograph from your family, or maybe you've run across one in a garage sale and wondered what this archaic device is. People actually used to listen to music on these back when the dinosaurs were around. No, I'm just joking. I'm making some of you feel bad for being old, but that's okay. I remember when I was a kid, CDs were around, but they hadn't yet taken over, and so I still listened to music on tapes. And I had a double-decker tape player in my room, and so the cool thing was I could take a tape and put it in one side and then take a blank tape and put it in the other side and very carefully hit record and play at the same time and copy the music over. Now, unfortunately, it was a rarity to find someone, at least in my circle of friends, with an original copy. Normally, what you'd find is somebody who recorded from a friend who recorded from a friend who borrowed the tape from their sister. And so you have like a sixth or seventh generation. And unfortunately, with these things, every time you make a copy, the quality diminishes. And unfortunately, with these things, even over time, the quality of the recording gets lesser and lesser and lesser over time. And I think sometimes that can happen in our lives as well. Over time, the quality, the excellence, the effort we put into things diminishes. The familiar becomes ordinary and doesn't require our focus anymore. Over time, the effort that we used to put into something lessens, but we still hope to get the same outcome. When you first dated your wife, you pursued her. You were excited. You got butterflies. Don't pretend like you didn't. You would try to think of creative ways to impress her. You would take her out on dates. You'd surprise her with flowers. You put a lot of effort in. Perhaps now that you've been married for 5 or 10 or 15 years, You don't put as much effort anymore. Now you don't surprise her with dates or flowers, and yet you hope that the passion level remains the same. Or maybe for you, when you first got your job, you were excited and a little bit nervous. You would show up early and you would stay late. You would do whatever you could to try to impress your boss. But now that you've been with the company for a number of years, now you don't show up so early anymore, or you don't try as hard anymore, but yet you're still expecting the raises to continue to come. Over time, the familiar becomes ordinary, and it doesn't require our focus anymore, and oftentimes we don't bring our best. Excellence says, I'm going to bring my best into every situation, every time. While reading, I recently encountered an idea called the principle of compound effect. And the basic concept is that small but consistent habits or incremental changes add up to big dividends over time. For example, putting $1 a day into a mutual fund doesn't necessarily seem like a large investment, but over time, the accumulated deposits and their interest add up to exponentially greater than the initial investment itself. Now, I think this principle can be applied not only to finances, but in reality to every area of our lives. Your work ethic, your relationships, your personal development, even your walk with God. A lot of people tend to take the approach of making large periodic investments in these areas in order to initiate growth. And usually it's because they've fallen behind. You get a little behind in work, and so for a week you wake up at 3 a.m. and get there early to try to catch up. Your marriage is struggling, and so you go to a conference or you go to a counseling session. You feel distant from God, and so you rededicate your life. And sometimes it's necessary to do these things. But rather than having to periodically overhaul your life to make up for deficiencies, perhaps adopting the smallest daily habits would be the best path towards excellence and long-term sustainable growth in these areas. The reality is anybody can put in a lot of effort over a short amount of time to get their game back up to par. But usually, in my experience, those people often find themselves slipping again because they never mastered the small things, the daily disciplines that could have kept their game up to par all along. Imagine what would happen if you committed to improving yourself by 1% every day for the next year. If you committed to improving your parenting abilities, or the way you love and honor your spouse, or your eating habits, or your spiritual disciplines, what if you said, how could I improve my marriage today by 1%? How today can I be 1% better wife? How can I improve my attitude by 1% better than it was last week? Attainable, manageable, measurable improvements as you move towards giving your best to every area of your life. Nothing would be dramatically different initially, but I would venture to guess that over time, in a year, you would find yourself a completely different person. And that's because it's often the smallest things done consistently that have the greatest potential to change everything. What are areas of your life that you've maybe been coasting in? What are some areas that you need to increase by 1% each day? What are some practical, attainable steps that you could bring excellence into those areas? Excellence doesn't happen on accident. It happens when we bring our best into an area of our life. And I think that God deserves our best. I think that our families deserve our best. I think that every area of our life deserves our best. excellence honors God because it's you being who God created and desires you to be. Let me pray. God, I thank you for your word this morning. God, I thank you for this principle of excellence. God, I pray that as you created and destined and desired us to bring our best into situations, God, I pray that even this week, even right now, you would begin to reveal some areas of our lives that perhaps we could improve in. Maybe it's our family. Maybe it's our marriage. Maybe it's our kids. Maybe it's our job. Maybe it's our relationship with you. God, let us not wait for someone else to take the first step. God, let us not compare ourselves with others. But God, I pray that we would look for how can we bring our best? How can we increase by just 1% each day in these areas? God, I pray that we would adopt this principle of excellence, that we'd bring our best, that you would be honored through it, and that our lives would be blessed because of it.